Today, danger, inequality rising. Hi again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Well, according to a recent report, Australian capital cities are becoming more segregated along socioeconomic lines, and the trend is worst in Sydney, but inequality is rising elsewhere too. The Conversation published, "Our cities are widening the divide between the well-off and the rest. How can we turn this damaging trend around?" And it was written by three researchers from the University of Sydney. They talked about the so-called latte line, the infamous invisible boundary that divides Sydney between the most affluent northeast and the southwest. Historically, people north of the line enjoy better access to jobs and education and can capitalize on rising property wealth, and this has reinforced economic inequality. Despite our image as a classless society, similar spatial divides have long marked Australia's other capital cities as well, they say. So the question is, are things getting better or worse? Well, they set out to answer that question by investigating neighbourhood populations and how they've changed across Australia's five largest cities, Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, Adelaide and Perth. And they used census data to track patterns of wealth and disadvantage between 2011 and 2016. And they looked at who moved in, who moved out, or who remains in each location, and who goes to work where. So to see whether they could detect gentrification in action, they looked for evidence of lower income people being displaced from well-located areas. And they were also interested in signs of the reverse. For instance, has the boom in apartments near transport and employment centres helped lower income earners find more housing near their workplaces, counteracting spatial exclusion? So they used internal migration data from 2011 and 2016, and they traced movements between locations using the Australian Bureau of Statistics Statistical Area Level 2, the SA2 level. That's the smallest area for the release of full census statistics. Those localities also have a socioeconomic indice for areas, the SEIFA scores. And this is a combined measure of socioeconomic advantage and disadvantage, education, occupation, and economic resources. So they classified every SA2 into one of four neighbourhood types. Escalator, people moving in, come from SA2s with the same or lower SEIFA scores. And people moving out go to SA2s with higher SEIFA scores, so escalators signify upward social mobility. Gentrifier means in-movers coming from SA2s with higher SEIFA scores, more affluent areas, and out-movers go to SA2s with the same or lower SEIFA scores. Next, isolate. In-movers and out-movers come from and go to SA2s with the same or lower SEIFA scores, so the movers will have likely been priced out or excluded from other localities. And transit, where in-movers and out-movers come from and go to SA2s with higher SEIFA scores. And they counted the SA2s falling into each of those neighbourhood types, and the results show clear dynamic patterns of social exclusion along geographic lines. In the most advantaged areas, isolate neighbourhoods dominate. This indicates lower income earners have already been excluded from these locations. By contrast, transit neighbourhoods cluster in more disadvantaged neighbourhoods. This suggests those locations may offer access to economic opportunity, but they are at risk of becoming gentrified, excluding and displacing lower income residents. Access to jobs is essential for economic opportunity, and they measured connectivity to the main centres of employment at the SA2 level for the five cities using the ABS Census Journey to Work data. And again, they found higher SEIFA scoring neighbourhoods were better connected to employment centres than those with lower SEIFA scores. Higher income earners can afford to live close to their workplaces, lower income workers can't. And the most advantaged households benefited from their high access to employment opportunities. This is reflected in high house prices and rents in those neighbourhoods, and that in turn reinforces patterns of household wealth, poverty and spatial segregation. And the study revealed that high income and very high income earners are clustered in ever tighter spatial groups. In effect, they live behind an invisible neighbourhood exclusion barrier. And over time, moderate and low-income renters are displaced from those areas of affluence. Other low-income earners can't replace them as the housing has become too expensive. And this effect persists despite the economic ties lower-income workers often have to those areas. This results in the labour market where the highest earners are closest to centres of employment, whilst those on lower and moderate incomes are forced out of the city fringes and must travel more to get to work. This is in addition to the inefficiencies created by the mismatch between location of jobs and housing. So they said, how do the cities compare? Well, Sydney emerged as the most segregated and unequal of the five cities. The latte line is getting stronger. Melbourne emerged as a much more equitable city than Sydney, but the segregation effects are not as strong there. When it does occur like Sydney, segregation occurs at the high end of the market rather than at the lower ends. Perth echoes Sydney, but weakly. The spatial concentration of moderate income, high income, and very high income households in Perth have increased. Brisbane and Adelaide are the most stable cities in this study. However, they still show the same general trends towards segregation. And they close their article with a simple question. What can we do to create more cohesive cities? Well, they say globally, segregated cities entrench disadvantage, drain productivity, and deplete community well-being. Neighbourhoods and mobility between neighbourhoods matter. Explicit targets to reduce spatial segregation should become front and centre of our spatial planning efforts. Wider government investment in social and economic infrastructure should underpin those targets. And a first step would also be to make it mandatory for new developments across all suburban and regional localities to include affordable homes. Otherwise, the market will continue to sort lower income earners into areas of lower opportunity. Some parts of the United States have so-called anti-snob laws to counter gentrification and exclusion processes. These laws allow affordable housing developers to override planning rules in areas that lack lower cost options. And in Hong Kong, Singapore, and the Netherlands, governments coordinate infrastructure and residential development with public transport services. They ensure or directly deliver a range of social and affordable houses for people on all incomes to rent or to buy. So these examples show what can be done to fix our housing problem and to reduce the segregation in our cities. Governments need to do more than call for new housing supply or promise planning rule reforms to increase densities or to offer grants to first home buyers. A target number of new dwellings isn't enough. And we also need to have a planned and nuanced response to where these new homes would be located. Those homes must be affordable and close to old and new job clusters, must be well served by social and community infrastructure, and a mix of housing and tenure types that works against segregation. Setting measurable targets for affordable housing inclusion alongside investment, transport, education, health, and cultural infrastructure would be a good start. But I do think they miss the elephant in the room. It's the cost of housing which is driving this divide. And unless this changes, the gap between those advantaged and those disadvantaged will continue to grow. Add in high migration, which is often concentrated in certain high growth areas, and a willingness to live in smaller, cramped living conditions than the average Australian, and you can see how this exacerbates the problem. Frankly, bad policy is creating a more and more unequal society. The traditional idea of Australia as an egalitarian society is frankly dying. The property market is the problem, but governments are ignoring the consequences and focusing on announceables. As we discussed yesterday, we need to do better. And to underscore the point once again, those living in the outer suburban areas, already under significant financial pressure, are also incurring significantly larger costs of travelling and getting around because the infrastructure has not followed the property development. Again, this is a government-backed policy which must change. The truth is, we need better planning. We need to think differently about where we build and what we build. And I do think we need to challenge the high migration because that is part of the issue too. Bottom line is this. You may have thought of Australia as a relatively equal country, but the truth is rather different. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.